Nicole, I have incredible news.
Raleigh, what's up?
I just listened back to your episode, season one, episode two of this podcast, where you talked about how bad EVs were.
Oh, yeah.
And how they weren't the solution for the future. Uh-huh. And I'm completely radicalized against EVs now. And I think they are the worst technology we've ever invented.
Yeah, well, at the risk of giving you emotional whiplash, I gotta tell you why EVs might not be all bad. Okay, Raleigh, I know that you're probably sitting there saying to yourself, but Nicole...
That's not how I sound.
We already did an episode about EVs.
I am not a baby from the 30s, Nicole.
But Nicole, we already talked about EVs.
That's not how I talk.
Electric vehicles in season one.
And you're right.
Oh, awesome.
You're right.
I guess I am a baby from the 30s then.
We already talked about EVs in season one. I came down pretty hard on them. I stand by everything I said in that episode. You can still go listen to it. However, my main point in criticizing EVs is that if we simply do nothing but turn every single car on the roads into the exact same thing, but with a big old battery in it, that doesn't really help solve a lot of the problems of cars. We need to be shifting away from car-centric infrastructure. Generally, we need to be rethinking the way that cars are built, the size of cars, which, spoiler alert, is going to be a big part of the end of this episode. Those were my main points.
However, I was actually worried because when I drove my Ford F-650 truck to this recording and I revved the engine a couple times to psych myself up,
oh,
I was worried I was going to
no.
get in trouble. So this is good that
well,
EVs are actually really bad.
You are getting in trouble because EVs are an essential component of our transition away from fossil fuels.
Gasp. What the fuck? But you already, on that podcast, you said they were...
I'm starting to think that you didn't even listen to the first podcast.
I was there. I thought that counted.
No, there's a lot of people in the world who I think are either like actively lying about EVs and what they can do to keep us locked into fossil fuels, or have been misled or have some incorrect assumptions about electric vehicles and are therefore kind of undermining our transition to them, which again is a very important step towards getting us off of fossil fuels.
Well, Nicole, let's correct those assumptions.
We got to get some like game show music.
That's true. Oh, yeah.
That.
Yeah. So wait, Nicole, you're telling me that EVs are not only bad, but they're also good? Get your story straight.
Raleigh, I'm saying that we have to approach EVs with a little bit of nuance.
Okay.
And while I initially wanted to introduce myself to our audience as a little bit of a provocateur.
Wow.
By taking a counterintuitive position.
You're a real renegade, Nicole.
I now want to endear them to me by by showing what an empathetic person I am towards electric vehicles.
Got it.
So this is a clip of Pete Buttigieg.
Oh.
Who, no, really, I'm not a huge Pete Buttigieg fan, but I think he does a really good job in this clip.
Mm-hmm.
He is being questioned by Pete Stober, who Google tells me is an American politician, former professional hockey player,
whoa,
and retired law enforcement officer from Minnesota.
This man has lived many lives.
Truly. And he's now serving as a United States representative for Minnesota's 8th congressional district. And he's questioning former Mayor Pete, now Secretary of Transportation Pete, about electric cars.
Mm.
This clip is from September 2023 during a House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee hearing.
Mr. Stauber. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Secretary. I represent Northeastern Minnesota, Minnesota's 8th Congressional District. A couple questions. What is the average, do you know the average temperature in a Minnesota winter?
I know it's pretty cold, but I wouldn't
know. It's 12 degrees. Although some of my constituents saw temperatures as cold as 42 below last year.
Mr. Secretary, what's my wife's name? God, leading with a gotcha question.
Yeah.
What's my wife's anniversary? Because, oh shit, it's today? Shit.
Mr. Secretary, how many states have an average winter temperature of below freezing? It's half the country. Does cold weather affect an EV's battery life? Yes or no?
Yes, it does.
How much can an EV battery life be reduced by cold weather?
Depends on the chemistry of the battery and the model that you're in, but it's a substantial percentage of the EV battery life.
50% or more. And how long does it take for frostbite to kick in if an individual is out in the cold? Let's say their EV has run out of battery on northbound 35 between Minneapolis and Duluth.
You know, I once got stuck on northbound 35.
Well, 30,
I know
it's about 30 minutes. It's about 30 minutes before frostbite.
This is like a zero charisma rap battle.
Two guys with no riz.
And no rhythm. Just like, although I gotta say, I think Pete Buttigieg got the riz. Like, have you heard him talking? Like he is, Pete Buttigieg is doing his fucking best here. He's like, what's the average temperature of a Minnesota winter? It's pretty cold. Like, that's nice. And then he's like, what, have you ever been, what happens if someone's been stuck on this? I've actually been stuck on that road. Probably a lie, but whatever. And he's like, not even acknowledging he's saying anything.
Like I said, I'm not an unreserved Pete Buttigieg supporter, but I do think he handles this pretty well. And that he has some interjections coming up that I think are like, good job,
gotcha.
Mayor Pete.
Well, your thing is like you like all of his policies. You don't like that he's gay, right?
<Isn't> no, that... it's because I hate the troops.
Okay. And Mr. Secretary, do you know the average income household in the district that I represent? You probably don't, so I'll tell you. It's $69,000. And do you know what the average price of an EV vehicle is?
Sure, I pulled the latest numbers. The models are starting around $30,000 for sedans. They're getting into the 40s for.
According to Kelley Blue Book, the average price for electric cars was over $53,000.
Surely you're aware that they start closer to 30, right?
My constituents would have to work a full year to pay for this unreliable car, and would barely have enough life left over to care for their family.
I'm going to guess that most people don't pay the entire cost of a brand new car up front.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that most people who are making $69,000 a year would probably find a financing option of some kind and wouldn't be like, well, I guess I got to pay half my year's salary for this car that then I'm not going to have any money left over to care for my family.
I mean, I also don't think I know anyone who's ever bought a new car.
Unless you are, I'm going to say bad with money. I wouldn't pay the entire price of a new car up front if my salary was less than twice what the new car was.
It's pretty fucking badass to do it. By the way, this is September 20th, 2023. Uh-huh. My 10-year anniversary of moving to New York.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
I wonder if he'll talk about it.
What is the average median income of a single individual EV buyer? It's $150,000.
As of when?
It's $150,000.
As of when? I'm just asking because that number is going down each passing year.
This month. Uh-huh. This month. And how much of a taxpayer-funded subsidy is given to those high-income earners to purchase their EV?
As you may recall, the Inflation Reduction Act was set in such a way that there was an income cap on how you could benefit from it, so that the wealthiest people are not able to take advantage of that. But we do wish we had your support,
Mr. Secretary, would you agree it's $7,500?
Say again?
Would you agree at $7,500?
$7,500 is the maximum credit that is eligible, and we think that making EVs cheaper for working families to the tune of $7,500
Mr. Secretary, excuse me. Do you think that it's fair for your administration to force constituents to purchase these electric vehicles when they're not working, especially in northern Minnesota?
Well, the premise of the question is false because we're not forcing anybody to purchase any technology. Can you refer to any particular policy that forces anybody to purchase?
By 2035, you want two-thirds of Americans to be using electric vehicles. They don't work in northern Minnesota in the cold weather today. And I want to just share something with you. Mr. Garamendi, and I agree with him.
Great name.
Buy American. Last July, you sat in that same spot and answered our questions. And I told you about a concern that I have with child slave labor in the Democrat Republic of the Congo.
Close.
And I told you that we could mine these critical minerals needed for EVs in the district that I represent under the best labor and environmental standards in the world. But you and the administration went ahead with an MOU with the DRC in January of this year. Well-documented child slave labor in the DRC, hardly any environmental standards. And your administration chose to enter MOUs with the Congo, where 15 of the 19 mines are owned by the communist country of China, where they use slave laborers.
A lot of extra S's.
Yeah. Or missing X.
It's unbelievable that you chose other workers over the American worker. And it's unbelievable that you won't allow mining, you and your administration won't allow mining here in Minnesota and the United States. Your Secretary of Energy, Secretary Granholm, came to the Western Caucus, and I happened to ask her, I said, do you know the only nickel mine in the United States today? She couldn't answer that. Do you know where it is?
No, I don't.
Minnesota.
It's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, the Eagle Mine.
Fuck.
It's the gold standard. And she's our energy secretary. And do we need nickel, cobalt, and copper for these electric vehicles as we transition? The answer is yes. We need to mine here in America with American miners, American labor. We can do it.
Wait, what's his fucking point? Americans hate these EVs. We don't want them. No one's going to want them. And we need to mine all the shit we need for EVs so all of our Americans can have them.
Yes. Yes. And this, like, ignores the fact that, like, they're actively trying to open mines in certain places in America.
Mm.
And yes, in some places they're running into like federal environmental standards roadblocks, but then he's like, and there's no environmental standards in the Congo. And it's like, well then what do you want?
I mean, the other, sorry, I'm just like fuming at this guy. So his whole point is that like, you're trying to tell me you want to make EVs a thing when nobody wants EVs? Well, that's going to be pretty hard to do, considering all of us want to make EVs desperately because we love them. What's wrong with you? It's like, I think a little consistency would be nice.
Yeah.
The biggest copper nickel find in the world, and your administration just banned it. Union labor, Mr. Secretary, that we want.
Republicans famously supportive of union labor.
In your administration, took the union labor off mining. And not only in northeastern Minnesota, but across this country, because today, this administration, they cannot give one example of allowing a mine to be opened in this country. And I yield back.
So why I like that clip, despite how infuriating it is it does a good job, I think, of showcasing the two kinds of arguments that I generally see against EVs. The first one of which is electric cars are just as bad or worse for the environment and also for people.
Okay.
And the other kind is that electric cars are not practical for me. They don't work given my circumstances. They're not good cars. I don't want to buy one. And I'm going to talk about both of those arguments separately instead of kind of lumping them together in a contradictory way like Mr. Stuber did.
I mean, he only had one talk. He had to get both of his completely contradictory arguments in.
So let's start with the argument that electric cars are just as bad or worse for the environment.
Okay.
It's simply not true, and it's the easiest one to debunk. So the first environmental aspect that I want to talk about that actually that guy didn't mention, but that you do hear pretty often, I heard it when I bought my car, which is a Chevy Volt. That's like a plug-in hybrid. And when I was buying it, I told the lady at the bank about it because I had to run to the bank at the last minute because I didn't realize I couldn't put it on a debit card. And she was like, I don't know. All of our energy comes from coal anyway, so it seems like it's just as bad to me. So I'm just going to buy the car that I want.
What the hell is she doing?
I don't know. Trying to talk you out of
a car purchase? Yeah. She works for the bank. They make money when
First
people
of all,
do
the
that.
The car that I bought was $7,000, so I was also buying it because it was a cheap car.
Nice.
So what does it matter if our energy comes from fossil fuels in the grid or fossil fuels in our gas tank?
That's right. I mean, people think like, oh, you think you're being so green? Where do you think your electricity comes from? Like, that's the classic, like, you dumb lib of TikTok.
Totally. And the short answer is that by every measure, electric cars are still better. Mm. The first one is that powering the grid with fossil fuels is only relevant if we're not shifting to renewables, which we overwhelmingly are. This is a bigger problem in states like West Virginia and Kentucky, where they still get a lot of their power from coal. But even if we're still on fossil fuels, electric motors are still more efficient per equivalent mass of carbon used. Mm. So even if all of your energy in your EV is coming from fossil fuels, because your car's electric motor is more efficient, you're using less carbon in the process.
And that makes sense, right? Like, you have an internal combustion engine, and that engine's like the size of a microwave, and then you've got a power plant, which is massive and much more efficient at power generation. If you're getting that power into your car, it's probably going to be more efficient than if you're blowing up a fucking ancient fern in your personal vehicle.
You gotta stop blowing up ferns. Yes, and also even the way that electric cars work is just more efficient. I talked to my friend Jason Torchinski.
Jason Torchinski. How's that son of a bitch doing?
He's good.
He owes me $10.
He had a major coronary event and he's recovering from it. It's great. Jason rules.
I don't know Jason. I just thought it would be. It's a good name, and then I found out he had a major coronary event. I feel bad.
He's fine. He's doing good now. He showed me a scar when we talked on Zoom. He's doing good. Jason rules. I cannot say enough nice things about Jason Torchinski. He and I used to work together at Jalopnik. He founded this website called The Autopian. Some of the links that we put in the show notes are going to be to The Autopian. You got to check out Jason's work. He, I think, is the most interesting car writer working today. And he talked to me a lot about EVs. He's done a lot of work with EVs. And one of the things he told me is that the actual conversion of energy into motion is still more efficient in an electric car.
Hmm.
A gas motor at best is maybe 40% efficient. You lose a lot to heat. And in an EV, you just don't lose that much. The amount of energy in gasoline is phenomenal and very storable, which is why we used gasoline for so long. And he told me that even if you have a modern EV with a huge battery, it's the equivalent of having a 3-gallon gas tank in terms of like stored energy potential. But because you're able to use more of that energy, your car can go way further on the equivalent of 3 gallons of gas.
So it's like if you put 10 gallons of gas in a Ford F-650 and 3 gallons of gas in a Toyota Prius, you're going to get a lot more distance out of the Prius, even though it's less gas.
Sort of. I would think of it more in terms of like, instead of thinking of it as gas, think about it as like total units of energy stored in the fuel.
Okay.
And so if you have, you know, 10 units of energy stored in a gas car versus the same 10 units of energy stored in an electric car, the electric car will go further on the same amount of energy because you're losing less to heat.
The joules.
Yes, you're running the jewels.
Run the jewel, please. Run the jewel, please. Actually, there's a Blockbuster Night Part 2 has this opening that goes, dun up, dun up, dun up, bam, bam. And it's so fucking cool.
Wow, it's like I'm at a Run the Jewels concert now.
I accidentally went to a Run the Jewels concert.
How do you accidentally go to a Run the
Jewels
concert?
It was at GovBall.
Okay.
And at one point, they're like, all right, everybody put your hands in the air and then do this. Man, it looks tight as hell. Like, what the fuck? Who are these guys? And I found out they're pretty cool. Hey there, a little inside baseball. We record this very podcast at the Climate Town office. And if you're not familiar with Climate Town, it's a YouTube series we make for as cheaply as possible. And that means schlepping our camera equipment all over New York City.
Yes, our backpacks are full, and the gear we reach for every time is Peak Design.
That voice you just heard is Ben Bolt, the executive producer of this podcast and of Climate Town.
That's right, Riley.
I mean, this is an ad, but we are genuinely loaded with Peak Design gear, from backpacks to sling bags to camera accessories. And by we, I usually just mean Ben. Ben literally has like 7 things from Peak Design on during any given shoot.
Yeah, really. I mean, they make good stuff. My freaking phone case from Peak Design. My phone charger on my desk. That's Peak Design too. My out front bike mount that I can put my phone on. Guess what? Peak Design. You know that little tripod we use on Climate Town shoots?
The little travel tripod?
The little travel tripod. They got organizers. They got straps, clips, duffel bags, everyday bags.
And they're not fucking around. Peak Design gear is guaranteed for life, whether you buy it firsthand or 10th hand.
And they can make that kind of commitment and not go broke because they build stuff to last.
As my father would say, it's built like a brick shit house. And now I'm hearing it out loud, that term is a little dated.
Peak Design is a certified fair trade B Corp that prides itself on recyclable materials, and it lobbies lawmakers in DC for environmental legislation. They're also the group who nominated Climate Town to be an environmental partner with 1% for the Planet. So double thank you. And they also have been a podcast supporter of ours from day one. And also, they just make really good stuff.
So go to peakdesign.com/playbook. That's peakdesign.com/playbook for 20% off some of our favorite products and a picture of Ben on set dripping with Peak Design gear.
I'm literally going to try to put as many pieces of Peak Design gear as I possibly can into one picture.
I'm glad we just got health insurance because Ben's back is going to be demoed.
But not because the Peak Design stuff is heavy. The other shit that we put inside
it. Well, in bulk, it's heavy.
If you
stack enough
all
Peak Design stuff.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not saying it's heavy gear.
They got a
sweet
shoulder strap. It really takes the weight off your shoulder.
It's going to crush you to death.
If that's how I got to go, sayonara.
Now, because I'm so biased to just take everything that Jason says at face value because I think he's great. I wanted to make sure I did the background work. So I double checked those numbers and found an article in the New York Times called EVs Start with a Bigger Carbon Footprint, which we'll talk about in a second, but that doesn't last. And this is from 2022. And this article says, and a study conducted in India by RMI, a nonprofit organization that works to increase sustainable energy systems, found that the country still showed net gains for battery electric vehicles, even though it generates 75% of its electricity from coal. The superior efficiency of battery electric vehicles is so significant that operational savings, even in carbon-intensive contexts, position BEVs as a net win.
What's a BEV?
Battery electric vehicle.
Oh, gotcha.
Bacon, egg, and vehicle.
It's a bacon, egg, and vehicle. We have to keep that in, even though producer Ben said it, and he's normally a silent figure on the podcast. That's very funny. So to put that in a little bit more human language, it basically means that India gets the vast majority of its energy from coal, and it still, because of electric vehicles, sees fewer fossil fuel emissions from its transportation sector.
Okay. So even if coal is powering the grid, which in America it's increasingly not, but even if it is, it's actually still more efficient than an internal combustion engine.
Yes.
Okay.
And this is the first time I'm going to bring this up. We'll talk about this a lot more at the end of the episode.
Okay. It's a bad haircut. I'm sorry.
This would be largely mitigated by having smaller cars. We talked about this in the first episode we did about EVs, but batteries are extremely heavy. And so the larger car you need a way, way bigger battery that's harder to move, whereas you can be even more energy efficient. And this is true of ICE cars also. So like a regular gas car, like pretty good gas mileage, it's like 35 miles per gallon. I have a Vespa, off-brand Vespa, that's much smaller. It has like a 1 gallon gas tank, and I get close to 90 miles per gallon out of that. And that's just because there's less weight to move. And so that's true of electric cars too. So if we don't have gigantic EVs, even if we're operating on a fossil fuel grid, we'll use way fewer fossil fuels just because it takes less energy to move that weight.
Gotcha. So it's about efficiency of like what kind of motor you're using and what is that motor having to pull along.
Yes.
So if you got like a electric motor with a lighter vehicle, that's like the best of both worlds.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. And I do have a picture of Nicole flying down the street in that Schmespa or whatever it is. So I'm going to set it.
It's a genuine buddy.
Wow. You're a genuine buddy.
Thank you so much,
of
Raleigh.
Of course. We'll put it on the Patreon page so people can see it.
Okay, great. So that's like the fossil fuel aspect of EVs. I think that's pretty cut and dry. There's not really a world in which they use as much fossil fuels as gas-powered cars. But when you get into the other environmental aspects of electric vehicles, it becomes a little bit more complicated because the impact isn't zero.
Okay.
And now I'm going to play you a clip of a familiar voice.
Uh-oh. Bob Barker?
ICE cars are generally much less carbon-intensive to produce.
To produce, because you don't need the battery.
Exactly. Okay. A lot of the carbon intensity is in the battery.
Gotcha.
I don't want to play too much in the last episode because I want to convince people to go listen to it. But that was the two of us in episode 2, season 1, talking about how electric cars are more carbon intensive to produce. And a lot of that is because of the battery manufacturer. And there's a few reasons for that. The process of physically making the battery requires carbon, but also the supply chains are much longer, which we'll also talk about in the human rights violation section. But the materials from the battery just have to come from a lot more places. You have to put them on transport ships and take them to different countries, and they're processed in one place and assembled in another place. And so like carting them around the world is very carbon intensive, and they're heavy to cart. That's like one of my big problems with EVs is the batteries are very heavy. And so the transportation emissions just getting them around to the assembly point are quite high.
Gotcha. So even though you don't have to make an engine in an EV, you do have to make a battery, and the manufacture of that battery is so complicated, it just takes a lot more carbon to accomplish.
Yeah.
Okay.
That being said, that in and of itself is not a reason not to buy an EV. Most studies show that the increased upfront carbon emissions that come from the manufacture of the car are canceled out within about 2 years of driving.
2 years.
2 years. But that depends on the size of your vehicle, how much you drive, and what your energy mix is.
Okay.
So if you live in California, which gets a lot more of their energy mix from renewables, you're driving your car pretty often, and you have a smaller car, then that deficit makes up faster.
Gotcha.
And so rather than a reason not to buy an electric car, I think that is a very compelling reason that if we want to meet our emissions goals as soon as possible, we should be looking at smaller electric cars generally. Smaller cars with smaller batteries are going to require fewer carbon inputs to make, and it'll make up those emissions faster just with daily use.
Gotcha. And I guess, like, to the point of the season one podcast, like, we are swapping out a bad option, which are internal combustion engine vehicles, with another not great option, which are building these big ass electric cars and like this like 2 years, 5 years that it'll take to offset. Like, that's still bad. And it's like, it's important to remember that they're both kind of bad options.
If the only way that you're going to get your brother-in-law to switch to electric is to get him to go from an F-150 to an F-150 Lightning, on balance, that's better, but I wouldn't say it's great.
Okay.
It's like a move towards decarbonization, but it's not going to get us there if everybody makes that one-to-one switch.
Gotcha.
So those are like the carbon impacts of EVs, but the environmental impacts of creating electric vehicles go beyond carbon emissions. And specifically the one that you hear mentioned and the one that our friend Pete Stober mentions and definitely really earnestly cares about in a way that is coherent and straightforward are like the mining impacts of things like lithium and cobalt and nickel. And he was nickel. Very specific about nickel.
Nicole, do you know where the one nickel mine is in America?
Well, now I know it's in the Upper Peninsula.
Nicole, do you know what my favorite color is?
I'm going to say blue.
Fuck. She's good.
So this question's a little tough because are there negative environmental impacts from mining? For sure. And a lot of them are very bad. Mm. I think a relevant question when it comes to EVs is how does it compare to the extraction of fossil fuels?
Okay. So yeah, there's like a lot of environmental implications to how much oil we import, how we extract our own oil, refining it into gas. Like that's a little bucket. Then there's the bucket of like, where do we get our lithium from? How do we get our nickel out of the ground and refine it and move it around the country and move it around the world?
Yeah.
And these are like, how do we, let's compare them. Give me a comparison.
Well, the disappointing answer is that almost everybody says there's not a way to apples compare it.
That is disappointing.
It is disappointing. I know. Per MIT's climate portal, there's an article called How Does the Environmental Impact of Mining for Clean Energy Metals Compare to Mining for Coal, Oil, and Gas?
What does it say?
You think it would be... It's a surprisingly long article.
No, we just need one sentence.
I know.
Better, worse. Same.
They quote Professor Scott Odell, who specializes in clean energy and mining, who says, the argument could be made that with the clean energy transition, we're exchanging a fossil fuel-based energy system with a metals-based energy system.
Okay.
Odell explains that making an apples-to-apples comparison is challenging because methods for extracting and processing oil and coal are different than those for metal mining. Even mining two different metals or two different deposits of the same metal can call for different techniques. Quote, I think if someone were to tell you one or the other is better in terms of direct impacts pound for pound, you should ask a lot of questions about how they got that answer.
Gotcha.
So it is really difficult to compare. Some things that we know are like lithium mining is environmentally intensive.
Hang on. Intensive is a very passive word.
Okay, well, that's what my outline says. So I don't know what you want me to say.
I just don't want to be accused of not telling the whole story.
Lithium mining is environmentally bad.
Okay,
how does that sound?
That sounds worse and more accurate.
Okay, lithium mining is environmentally bad.
Okay.
Consuming significant amounts of water, about 2 million liters of water per ton, but it's the kind with an N and an E. So that it's different than
regular tons.
I'm not going to convert anything, but that sounds like a lot. 2 million liters of water per ton of lithium, according to the UN.
Okay, got it.
And then mining cobalt and manganese also produces lots of toxic waste in the process.
I always forget about manganese.
Yeah, manganese doesn't get the credit that it's due, I think.
It sounds like you're trying to say magnesium, but fucked it up a little bit.
Yeah,
but it
is a different element.
Yeah, I'm so low on magnesium. I can't tell the difference between magnesium and manganese.
And what's worse is that this drain on water is particularly painful in areas that are already water strained.
Why?
Well, because then you gotta use a lot of water to mine precious metals instead of drinking it or growing crops with it.
Oh, that makes sense. What if that was my personality? Would you still be friends with me? How come? Cops are bad. Why?
I probably, honestly, I would find that less irritating than somebody than who just normally argued.
Oh, got it. Okay.
I would find that less irritating than the way you are.
Got it. Got it.
So all of that is to say, like, the environmental impacts are very real, and it's very hard to compare. But also, when you see memes like this one on Facebook that I'm going to have you describe, that's also why you should be pretty skeptical of them. So, Raleigh, can you describe this meme for me?
First of all, I love it because it's a picture, and it's got impact font. Okay, it says, "This is a mine where lithium is extracted for electric car batteries." And it's a pretty fucked up looking mine. It looks as though it's been carved out of the earth in different layers. And
it's big.
It's big. It's huge. And it's gross. And then this is an oil sand site in Alberta. And it looks like just one oil derrick going into the ground surrounded by, you know, some infrastructure and then all trees after that. And then it says, "Tell me more about how your electric car is better for the environment." And then it's got a little watermark that says Saskatchewan proud, but it's been cut off a little bit. You can tell it says Saskatchewan proud because you have enough of the letters, but it's like somebody has cut that part off of the meme on accident.
Yeah, sure.
Cropped it out a little bit.
Yeah, so this is basically a meme that's like, look how much worse mining for batteries is than mining for oil. Mm. First of all, again, not an apples to apples comparison per Professor Odell.
Yeah, that's like showing a sleeping picture of Steph Curry and then a picture of the Detroit Pistons in action and like, tell me how Golden State Warriors keep winning basketball games.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing about this is I found this meme debunked in Canada's National Observer in 2017 in an article called "Don't Be Fooled by Attacks on the Lithium Battery." And some fun facts about this meme. So the first problem is that the lithium mine pictured here is actually BHP Billiton's Escondida copper mine in Chile, which is the world's largest copper mine. So they picked the biggest metal mine they could find, and it's not lithium. And the bottom image is of an Alberta oil sands operation. But it's an in-situ underground facility and doesn't represent the enormous open pit mining operations used to extract most bitumen.
Wow. Okay, so it's not a good faith comparison sort of meme.
No, I would
shame
not think
on
so.
That meme, giving a bad name to good memes, accurate memes everywhere.
Yes, it's really casting a pall over all those cheeseburger cats that I've laughed at so often.
Something happened to you with that cheeseburger meme, and it never left, and I don't know what it is. I'm going to find out by the end of this podcast.
It's a mystery to all of us, Raleigh. But all of that is to say that when you see somebody making this comparison of, like, oil extraction is much more eco-friendly than lithium extraction,
right,
or manganese extraction or whatever, they're at best being misleading, maybe even lying. Not necessarily that they've picked a specific example that's wrong, but that that's a cherry-picked example or doesn't, you know, isn't a one-to-one comparison.
Okay.
I could also find, like, a small lithium mine that looks better than a gigantic open-pit bitumen mine.
Right.
I'm not here to, like, really hitch my wagon to lithium mining for sure. But I think what's worth pointing out is, like, there's just not a right answer for these people. You're always going to be able to find a way to say, like, well, we can't do EVs because of this or that. But it just shuts down the conversation instead of us being like, well, what if we just talk about other options?
Yeah, yeah. It's as if the alternative argument is like, well, we can't do that because that's bad, but they're not acknowledging that the current way of operating is bad itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the conversation doesn't get to get past fucking step zero, where we stop being children and talk about, like, how to mitigate damage.
Yeah.
And I guess it's like, it is relevant to just take a second and look around the room you're in right now, look around the car you're in or the city that you're in, and just clock, like, every single piece of that city infrastructure was probably built on mining in some way.
Mm-hmm.
The steel to make the buildings.
Everything I own is made of wood.
That's true. You are walking. You're sort of walking like a cowboy.
My
side
car,
to side.
Made of wood. These pants, made of wood.
My windshield, difficult to see through. But it's wood, baby. Yeah. No, I mean, like, we are a species that has learned to live the life we like to live because we can extract it from the earth and the ground, and we like rip it out of the earth in some way. And our question now is, like, in what way should we be ripping things out of the earth? Should we be doing it, you know, the way we've always done it? Should we be doing it in this new way? And all these new arguments that are popping up, like, oh, we can't extract like that. It's like, where was this argument when we were extracting like this? You know, yeah. Like, this is, let's go into this with open eyes. We are a species that fucks the planet at every possible opportunity. And like, it, as long as we're going to continue to fuck the planet, how do we like minimize the damage mm-hmm. while like not writing off the previous damage?
Yeah. So here are a few arguments that I'm not even going to say defend lithium mining, but are for why we might consider EVs over continued oil extraction. This is an article from The Guardian called "How Problematic is Mineral Mining for Electric Cars?" That came out
nice in soft tone there. Yeah.
It came out in December of last year.
Should we cancel mining?
This is from Julia Poliskinova, the Senior Director for Vehicles and E-Mobility at Transport and Environment, a Brussels-based think tank. Quote, by 2030, we will need around 30 million tons of critical minerals for batteries, which sounds like a lot. That is very, very substantial. But if we put this in comparison, we used in 1 year 15 billion tons of fossil fuels.
Holy shit.
Once again, that is tons with an N-N-E-S, and I don't know how much that is.
Well, as long as it's the same as the previous metric. Yes,
they're using all of the same units. Okay, I just can't. I don't have a frame of reference for how that compares to a regular American ton. This same article from The Guardian also says, and most criticisms of electric cars' mineral use miss a hugely important point. The majority of battery materials used in cars are likely to be recycled. That will drastically cut down on the amount of wasted material compared with fossil fuels, which disappear invisibly but harmfully to the planet. And according to David Bott, the head of innovation at the Society of Chemical Industry, the real thing people forget is that once it's been mined, you will end up being able to reuse 80 to 90% of the metals. You don't have to go to the planet to steal more minerals.
That is really nice. I suppose the alternative point is that in order to transition as many cars as we need to into EVs, mm-hmm. we're going to need a lot more lithium out of the ground. So like there will be kind of a sort of lithium rush where old-timey lithium prospectors are heading to the mountains to strike it rich.
Yeah, except there's 6-year-old children in the Congo.
I knew that, saying that riff, and I was just like, what am I doing? I'm walking into this thing, and Nicole's about to freaking put a spike in me.
As I love to do. We will talk about that in a minute. The last point that I want to make about the environmental impact of mining is that the extraction of fossil fuels is like a very mature technology that has become, I would say, like as technologically advanced, like it's starting to hit the asymptote of how many more advances that we're going to make.
It's a mature fuel, right?
It's a mature fuel. Yeah. It's the technology's been around a long time. We've done it a lot. Comparatively, this precious metals mining is a kind of a small industry. And people believe that as it grows, there's a lot of potential for it to become less environmentally harmful. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see how much it happens.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that like as the technology to extract these precious metals matures, it'll get more efficient and hopefully less damaging to the environment.
But again, that's like projecting the future. I can't, you know, past performance is no indication of future, or past returns is no indication of future performance, whatever that saying
right.
is. Thank you so much. So like I think particularly in terms of like efficiency, I think it's likely that that'll happen as mining scales up. I don't know if the environmental harms will in correlation go down. And just to wrap things up on the environmental section, Scott Odell, the guy from before, believes that the way forward for clean energy mining is through three main changes. The first is to reduce consumption, so we need fewer materials in the first place.
Nice.
Again, we got to get people walking. We got to get people biking. We got to get people out of cars, and we got to make the cars smaller. So we just need fewer of these minerals.
Make the cars so small people can't get in them.
That's perfect. Let's make the cars so small that they're roller skates and then people are skating everywhere.
Internal combustion roller skates.
Coal rolling roller skates.
Coal roller skates, yeah. That'd be pretty fucking cool. Just one little brick of coal, you just jam it into the skate, and then you cook down. Yeah, you gotta start it up like a goddamn lawnmower. God, that'd be fun.
Okay, the second one is to advance the circular economy, reusing minerals instead of mining new ones. Quote, there are a lot of metals already in the system, and at the end of their lifespan, we send a lot of those to the dump. So if we make battery recycling more efficient than it is now, then we won't have to mine as many minerals over the long term.
Awesome.
And the third one is we need to raise industry standards and adopt regulations, which historically extractive industries have loved and done easily and without a lot of prodding.
They've actually asked to have them done to themselves.
Yeah, they were like, we need more regulations and we're going to raise our standards of our own volition.
That's right.
Yes. So I think that's probably pretty likely to happen.
Okay, Nicole, to hell with your environment. Tell me about the people here.
Okay, yes, let's definitely talk about it because human rights violations are one of the biggest arguments that you hear against EVs. Our friend Pete Stauber made it for reasons that I think are not completely genuine, which we'll talk about in a second. But I think really well-meaning people who care about the environment and genuinely want to transition to EVs are rightfully concerned about all of the human rights violations associated with.
These are credible allegations.
These are credible allegations, okay. Like on
about
video.
Rare earth metal mining.
About rare earth metal mining. I think the most famous one is cobalt mining in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. You got kids as young as six working
in mines.
Don't you
mean the Democrat Republic
of
Congo?
Yeah, the Democrat Republic, AOC's Democrat Republic of Congo. You have kids as young as six working in the mines. There's lots of forced labor there. There's also lots of forced labor in Chinese lithium mines also. Mm. These are well documented. It's like kind of incontrovertible that it's happening and it's a big problem. Before we get into like how do we reconcile that, I want to talk just a little bit about like the facts of the situation. Part of the difficulty and why there tends to be so much forced human labor and so many human rights problems with mining for batteries specifically, is that the process of mining and refining these minerals is just more complicated and it requires more stops and more inputs and more suppliers and even more countries than oil does. It's just really hard to ensure, even if you're a big company, that every single step in that process has been like 100% above board. Not that I think that's an excuse for them not to do it, but that's why, like, so far it's just kind of hard to keep track of where everything is coming from,
sure.
Particularly because a lot of these minerals are coming from places where like they just don't have safety regulations. And so nobody's like writing down anything. I mean, one, they don't have to, but two, even the places where like they haven't used forced labor or child labor are like, oh, we haven't like kept a record of anything. So it's really hard to track that down.
Yeah, it's part of like imperialism, right? Like we need all the supplies fast and like we'll pay. Just get them out of the ground and get them over here.
Totally. But also like a battery manufacturer might order, you know, 50 tons of lithium from a lithium like vendor, but mm-hmm. that vendor may have combined his lithium from like seven different sources, four of which are above board and three of which engaged in human rights violations. And there's, you know, without the battery manufacturer going and checking out each of those lithium mines, they don't have any way to know. They just have to take the lithium vendor's word for it. And that happens at like a bunch of stops along the process.
Gotcha.
And so then it creates the question of like, if you know that 90% of your battery is sourced from like good sources that haven't engaged in any human rights violations.
That seems very optimistic. That
I know. Some percentage is good and some percentage is a mystery box and you assume there's human rights violations. I think for a lot of people, like any amount of human rights violations is a no-go. And like, I don't really think ethically you can like argue with that position.
I mean, I think though the way to argue with that position is to say like all money is dirty. You are probably like currently Nicole is drinking out of a big coffee mug. There is a pretty high likelihood that the coffee beans included some human rights violation labor in the production of it. The mug itself, you know, like there's just we as Americans, we demand shit immediately and we don't give a shit. You know, like it doesn't matter where it comes from for the vast majority of the supply chain. We are stewed in human rights violations. We have marinated our culture in people who are worse off than us having to have worse lives so that we can have good lives. You know,
and to
like,
be clear, I mean, maybe Raleigh disagrees with me. I don't know. But I think we should be moving away from human rights violations.
I'm against human rights violations.
I'm willing to go on record and say that I am against human rights violations, but I don't want to put words in Raleigh's mouth.
Brave stance.
And I think we should be moving away from that across the board. Mm-hmm. But when you're just cherry picking climate solutions, that to me doesn't read like a genuine care of human rights violations.
Right.
And just seems like you don't want to give up your Ford F-650.
Or you're just like a contrarian for the sake of your political party.
Totally. I'd be curious if Pete Stauber has an iPhone. And I know that like it is itself a logical fallacy to be like, well, this thing is bad,
yeah,
but the thing that you're doing is also bad. So I don't want to play too much into that. But again, where is all this concern generally? If he were making like a good faith argument against human rights violations across the board, then I would take his criticism of EV batteries a little bit more seriously. Now, that being said, like, again, human rights violations bad. I'm going on record on that.
I will die on this hill, yeah.
But again, kind of like with the environmental issues, I wanted to see how does it compare to whatever human rights violations come from oil extraction. Mm. And unfortunately, there's also not an apples-to-apples comparison. Per our researcher, Canute, oil is simply extracted differently than these commodity minerals, and it doesn't really benefit from all of the cheap manual labor that mineral mining does. Mm. There are human rights violations perpetrated by people drilling for oil, but it's not really demonstrably a violation that occurs in the harvest of the material. Mm. Like certain oil magnates have killed journalists, you know, yeah, their families have employed slave labor to build their empires. And maybe it didn't come straight up from pulling the oil out of the ground, but we are functionally supporting an organization that engages in a lot of human rights violations.
Absolutely.
And through oil.
And like, where do you think they get the land to extract the oil? You know, they're pushing native people off the land. If that's not a human rights abuse, I don't know what is. You know, like they are intrinsic to the process. I think it's a little less like, here's a picture of a six-year-old actively pulling cobalt out of the ground. But it's there.
Yeah, totally. And I know we're talking about oil, but another fossil fuel, coal, is sort of famous for its human rights violations.
What? Since when?
Since kind of always. There were, by the way, a lot of children in those mines also.
Okay, Nicole, this is fake news, because those children are very, very old men by this point.
Well, if any of them are still alive.
Let's get them on the pod! And historically, the world of oil is totally fucked. These imperialist countries, America, among other imperialist countries, went into the Middle East and a lot of oil-rich countries and just really fucked them up just to secure their oil wells. Oil is extracted at all costs, no regard for the local population. It's not a clean industry. It's just maybe a little further along, and there were fewer iPhone 7s when they were doing it in the 40s, 50s,
sure.
60s, and today.
And I don't think the point there is that, like, well, we already did it to a bunch of people, so it doesn't matter if we do it to more people. I think the point to consider is...
No, that was my point. I'm sorry. Was that not
clear? Oh, okay. Once again, I'm going on record as against human rights violations on this podcast. I think the point is, because we have already experienced this and done this and seen how destabilizing and horrible it is, we should learn the lessons from oil extraction and really apply them right now to what is going to become a booming industry of precious metal mining.
Mm.
A lot of these precious metals are located in very financially disadvantaged countries. Like the Democratic Republic of the Congo is not known as like a financial powerhouse in the world, and almost all of the people there like live in poverty. And so having this big industry in cobalt could raise the standard of living for a lot of people, but...
Hard cut to Always Sunny theme song. It doesn't raise the standard for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of these sources are like, if we do it the right way, like it could be really good for these countries. And it's like, I'm trying to think of any example of when we've done it the right way in the past. And it's hard to come. Like one of the biggest movies of last year was specifically about... It was about Barbie,
yeah.
Which, as we all know, was about an indigenous population who had an extractive natural resources that brought them incredible wealth, and how white people fucked it up for them. So it's like tough to think of an example. The optimist in me wants to think like, well, extraction's always bad for the environment. but maybe there's a way that we can benefit these people. And I think if we're going to do that, we gotta really start working on it now.
Yeah. But ultimately, cherry picking just cobalt is a bad faith argument.
Totally.
Meant to forward a political agenda.
Almost always. And I want to wrap up the section with one more quote from the How Problematic is Mineral Mining for Electric Cars nice. Article. Mark Dummett, D-U-M-M-E-T-T. I can't imagine if there's two T's.
D-U-M-M-E-T-T.
I would say Dumet, but Dumet? I'm going to say Dumet. Mark Dumet, the head of business and human rights at Amnesty International, co-wrote one of the first reports exposing child labor in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Yet, he argues, there is no special problem with the battery industry. He has also seen firsthand alleged human rights abuses associated with the extraction of oil in the Niger Delta. Quote, these problems have always existed in mining. I strongly believe that this problem has been exaggerated hugely by opponents of the energy transition, the fossil fuel lobby. And neither do the green credentials of electric cars absolve the buyers of battery minerals of responsibility for abuses in the supply chain. Dumet said he hopes that the mining industry will, quote, use this moment to reform itself. Hmm. Which, again, industries love reforming themselves of their own volition.
Well, the thing is, they love spending money that uh-huh. they're not being forced to spend.
Yeah, totally. And how we address this problem is kind of complicated. There's not easy solutions, but it's not technologically outside of our capability to get these minerals without human rights violations. The best thing to do would be vertical integration on the part of the companies, which means that the companies would own every part of the supply chain that makes their batteries.
The best way to do this is monopolies.
So it's just not really realistic. But the more vertically integrated that companies with American labor standards can become, the fewer human rights violations there are likely to be.
I guess I can imagine a version where it's like a vertically integrated company that uses union labor at every step along the process. Mm-hmm. I guess I can see that as being mm-hmm. pretty protective of the workers' standards.
Yeah. Part of the problem, which is in this article from the Washington Post from 2022, called EV Supply Chains Have a Human Rights Problem. Can tech fix it? Talks about that. My internal response is probably not. My guess is no.
Yeah,
so I mean, I'm a little skeptical of all of this, but this is an article that does directly talk about ways that we can fix it. And the first thing that they talk about is how federal rules tie lucrative tax breaks to supply chain accountability, which is why manufacturers are racing to get a better grip on the origin of their materials. So that is one thing that's already happening. I have some issues with the way the Inflation Reduction Act helps people buy electric cars, and a lot of that has to do with the way we make cars in America. But part of the reason that they are so strict about the kind of cars that they'll help people buy is that they want to minimize human rights violations. Hmm. I don't think that's the entirety of the reason or even the majority of the reason, but it is to say that us putting regulations on what kind of cars the government will help people buy just inherently makes it harder to exploit human labor because they require accountability for consumers to use their money to buy cars.
Gotcha.
And that's targeted mostly towards Chinese products because they are far and away the largest manufacturer of EV batteries and EVs themselves. And because it's China, that's why I'm a little skeptical that this is really about human rights violations.
It might be motivated by something other than altruism.
Yes. However,
the U.S. government, you dirty dog.
But it does have the impact of being we will only allow tax breaks for cars that meet these standards is an effective way of, forcing foreign companies and governments who we don't they're autonomous. We don't have a control over them to meet human rights standards because they want to sell their cars to the American market.
Gotcha. Yeah, that feels like a pretty effective carrot where it's we're going to be able to drive the market for this car and this type of battery by subsidizing the purchases as long as you meet these requirements.
Yes.
That sounds like a pretty reasonable way to try to mitigate human rights violations.
Yeah. It's again, I have my issues with the way that they handle it, particularly because it really places limits on the kind of cars I think we need more of and encourages people to buy giant cars that I think we need less of. But in terms of human rights violations, I think that's probably a pretty good place to start.
That's always a strong sentence. In terms of human rights violations, let's actually prioritize that.
Yeah.
Actually, that's
yeah.
Now that you say it. Yeah.
So the article also gives a little bit more detail about why you might accidentally, like, oops, got a little bit of human rights violations in my battery without meaning to. It says, as companies scramble to build out and get control of their supply chains, they are finding out how much they don't know about them. They are learning that contractors who pledge to provide sustainable cobalt, for example, may be sneaking in sacks of the metal extracted with child labor, as detailed in lawsuits in a recent U.S. Department of Labor report. Some may be concerned that the nickel supplies they assumed met the highest environmental and social standards are corrupted with products smuggled from Russian producers in violation of sanctions. So it is that problem of, like, the ore comes from a lot of different places. So maybe you're like, great, I'm contracting with this mine that I've been to, I've seen there are no human rights violations, and I feel good about it. But then behind your back, the owner of that mine might be on the cheap buying a bunch of, like, human rights violations mineral and padding his own orders with that.
Okay.
And they say that creating a battery passport adds about $10 to the cost of a vehicle, according to auto industry officials, which I think is pretty reasonable for not having, being assured that you don't have child labor.
Mr. Pete Buttigieg, I have a question. Do you know how much a latte costs at my local cafe? It costs $5. Minnesotans don't have $10.
Well, then I guess they can just keep inhaling fossil fuel fumes.
They love it, except for our union workers. They hate it.
And the article also discusses a little bit about, like, the kind of technology that might help prevent human rights violations. And the technology engages handheld scanning devices, QR codes, and satellites to keep tabs on materials as they make their way around the globe. This admittedly to me sounds a little bit like when it's like they're using an algorithm.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean?
I think this is like there is a Web3 smart contract, satellite monitoring, like it's a little, like, bit of word salad that, like, oh, don't worry, we'll use satellites to make sure these kids aren't getting abused. And
yes.
It's like, ah.
But I also suspect that it's one of those things where, like, if they actually explained how the technology worked, I'd be like, I don't understand.
maybe that's trade protection too.
Possibly. It says alert systems flag inconsistencies along the way, which could include unplanned changes in chemical composition of a material, satellite images failing to confirm shipments are coming from the place suppliers say they are, and local officials issuing violations on the ground. So, like, a simple version of that might be like, okay, you scan a QR code at this point and the minerals weigh 1,000 tons. And then you scan it at its next checkpoint and suddenly it's like 1,500 tons, and you're like, what happened?
Yeah, I think, like, that obviously there are problems with that, but I think these are the steps we must take in order to get to a world where we're not abusing people
totally
for our lithium.
There's
for our cobalt.
Yes. And obviously the human rights violations associated with, like, child labor are the first ones that come to mind. But there's also human rights violations associated with, like, the like polluting the water supply of, like, a local community. For example, there was a big dam in Brazil that broke open that had a lot of the mining runoff in it. And it like killed people and ruined their water supply and stuff. And so this company, Circulor.
He did fight Batman recently.
He did. I'm just glad that he's moving into, like, sustainable technology. Circulor is exploring technologies that track dam stability from space, flagging companies when conditions at the site of a supplier become dangerous. So that kind of stuff, I think, is like, I don't know how you do that with a satellite, but assuming that you actually can, like, great, let's do more of that.
Yeah, a lot of this feels like we're going to replace all of our baseball umpires with satellites. And
yeah.
It's like, okay. let's bring a lot of solutions to bear on this because it is actually a massive problem.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm a pretty big tech skeptic. So I'm reading that more to illustrate, like, people are thinking about ways to fix this. I'm hoping there will be more realistic and more transparent solutions in the future. I don't think this is inherently a problem with mining rare minerals, but it is a problem right now that we should be thinking about and is, in my opinion, the most compelling reason to criticize EVs.
Gotcha.
And I hate to toot my own horn here, but I was totally right before. And the only way to truly eliminate all of the problems associated with mining is by doing it less, by not using cars as much. Like, the fewer cars that exist in the world, the more we're walking, the more we're riding bikes, the more we're, like, using active transportation, the fewer of these minerals we're going to need.
And the amount of minerals that go into, like, one electric vehicle motor could power hundreds of bicycles.
Yeah.
I don't know what the exact number is, but it's like there are more efficient ways to use
this
minerals.
Yeah, like if I eat cobalt, that'll make me strong enough to pedal my bicycle anywhere.
That's right.
That's how that works.
Is that why you're...
No, I'm very sick.
Yeah, the color of your skin, I would describe it as pallid.
So those are kind of the big arguments that are like EVs are actually worse for the environment and for people than gas cars. And if you can believe it, I'm only halfway through my outline.
Wow. I feel like we've been here for 6 days already.
I know. It's been a really long time. So I'm going to propose this.
Oh, Nicole, we're just friends. Let's not ruin what we've got.
No, I'm down on one knee for unrelated reasons. It's something else.
You're doing the Tebow?
Yeah, I'm Tebowing. I'm Tebowing in the year 2024.
Does anyone remember? If you remember Tebow, for the love of God, leave a comment wherever you possibly can, because I gotta do a little sociological research.
Yeah, I can't leave a comment because I'm too busy. My hands are doing the Tebow on my forehead thing.
Was
right?
That what like he this? Did?
I thought it was, right? It was head, fist to forehead?
All I know is that dude loved him some Jesus.
He loved Jesus. Regardless, I think we should split this episode up into two separate episodes.
That's what you're proposing.
That's what I'm proposing.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And then the whole second episode is going to be about people who are like, EVs are nice, but they're not practical for me.
Which a little bit is how my parents sound.
I was doing an impression of your dad there.
Okay. My dad is his name is Agnes, and he's really concerned.
I don't think EVs are practical for me.
What
I'm
is
Raleigh's
that? That's like
dad.
A cartoon crab character.
I don't want to drive an EV.
They seriously are like, oh yeah, we can't possibly get an EV. What if we need to drive 100 miles? And I'm like, when's the last time you drove 30 miles? And they're like, 6 years ago. So,
well, we'll be discussing all that and more in the next episode. Although now that I know that your parents are so resistant to EVs, I feel like maybe we should have done the second part first.
They're soft resistant to EVs. Okay. I think they needed to get warmed up with the first episode, and then we'll hit them with the cross hook. What do you call it? I'm not a fighter.
Clearly.
Uppercut. Uppercut.
Uppercut.
Hit him with the uppercut. Nicole, I want you to assault my parents with information about electric vehicles.
You got it.
Thank you.
The Climate Deniers Playbook was created by Raleigh Williams, that's me, Nicole Conlon, and Ben Bolt.
Our hosts are Raleigh Williams and Nicole Conlon, who is me, and our executive producer is Ben Bolt.
The show is produced by Gregory Haddock and edited by Brittany Terrell.
Our researchers are Carly Rizzuto, Knut Haraldson, and James Krugnail.
Theme music from the smooth, sultry mind of Tony Dominic.
And artwork by Jordan Dahl, who, yes, is technically my boyfriend, but that's not why we hired him. He's actually just really good at art.
Special thanks to the Civil Liberties Defense Center.
And to all of you who actually listen to the show.
And apparently even the credits.
Now that's dedication.
Okay, it's a bad haircut. I'm sorry.